So here we are at another Easter. And I think the perennial question that needs to be asked is, what are we doing? What does Easter mean? The kind of bogus and boneheaded answer that I was given when I was a little kid. Well, it proves that Jesus was God because he just flipped up out of the tomb and there he was, gone. Well, at this time they did not believe Jesus was divine when the book of Acts was written. And we see already in the book of Acts, Luke weaving a whole theological theme that pervades his gospel and the book of Acts, volume 2 of his. But this is all foreseen. This is all inevitable. Well, as so often happens with us religious types, we too often try to escape into some kind of rational explanation of what's going on. If Jesus was God, of course he couldn't keep him in the grave. Of course he had to go skyward. Well, folks, again, they didn't believe Jesus was God. So if you take that away, what are you left with? The man Jesus, that's what you're left with. And the way he lived, and that's what Paul was talking about when he said, when you believe in Jesus. You don't just say, oh, Jesus was God, so I have to, you know, I'm duty bound to believe. No. See, the problem with all that stuff is it's wonderfully safe and abstract and puts it all out there, and meanwhile I can go tromping along through my life without paying any attention to it really, or not being affected by it really. And we do that all the time in the church. You know? Jesus saved me. Hallelujah. You know, well, it's not the way it works. If, as I've been suggesting throughout Lent, that the whole purpose of Lent is to come to a greater and deeper self-understanding, I mean, the last thing you want to have recourse to is this kind of mythology about Jesus being God and therefore couldn't be earthbound, blah, 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 blah. No. So what's going on in our belief that God has raised this man from the dead? I think it's very simple. It means that this man, in his living and in his dying, exemplified what it was to be a human being, a fully developed human being. Period. Full stop. What do I mean by fully developed human being? He was utterly just to everybody he met. Utterly just. Open to everybody he met. Concerned for and responsive to everybody he met, you know? And that's what tickled God so much, because this is finally we got a human being that works, you know, that does what a human being is supposed to do as a human being. Now, the implications of this are ferocious, and I've been fighting this all week, and it struck me earlier today. This takes a profound and extensive rehabilitation of my imagination, because it's not Jesus was divine, and therefore all this. No, it means to say that all that violence and injustice and cruelty in our world is not the last word, as it seems to be. Our unkindness will not have the last word to say about what it is to be a human being. Our fear. Our dishonesty. So we're making this enormous act of imagination that God is greater than evil. God is not on the side of injustice, but of justice. Because if you took some empirical measure of the world and the way it works, that's not true at all. Everybody in this room has been treated unjustly by somebody, either intentionally or not. And we have been unjust to other people too. So the world is seriously askew. But that's SOP, standard operating procedure. That's just the way it is, as it has been in the beginning, is now, never shall be, you know. Justice will not have the last word. And that's why the claim of Easter is so outrageous and requires this terrible expansion of our imaginations, I think. At least it does for me. Yeah. To say that in every human being I can find a victim and a victimizer. But neither the victimhood nor the victimizerhood is the last word. God is finally going to have the last word, and the last word is love, of which justice is simply one major manifestation. Period. Full stop. And anything else is singing in the dark, or some kind of safe abstraction, or some kind of thing that happens to me, well, I stand by as a moderately interested bystander. You know? Oh, good. Good for you, God. Get Jesus out of that tomb. Oh, yeah, let me, that's all very nice. This thing demands of us a radical reconstruction of the way we live, it seems to me. Well, Jesus living and this is one we very much like to escape from, Jesus dying. But Jesus did not die by accident. Jesus did not die because there's some divine plan which says, listen, you got to die, son. No. To put it another way, Jesus was an utterly free man who was not hounded and hampered by regrets, by vindictiveness, by all the things that mark so much, not all, of course, but so much of our living. I mean, if we could subtract all of those nefarious elements, at least I would be a quite different human being, and I suspect many, if not all of you, would be as well. And the other thing, and this is extraordinarily important, the resurrection is not a private interaction between God and Jesus, or God and me, or God and each one of us in this room individually. Because justice and love are matters of relationships. You know? You're only just and loving in a relationship. And the astonishing thing, implicit in this claim of God having raised Jesus from the dead, it means everybody. Everybody, from time immemorial. To put it in another way, to take my very most favorite metaphor for who Jesus was and what he was about, the foot washing. The foot washing. So heaven, or the afterlife, or whatever you want to call it, means that somehow we are able to wash everyone's feet and have our feet washed by everybody. And that takes an enormous stretch of the imagination, it seems to me. So we've got Joseph Stalin washing the feet of those millions of Serbs. We've got Pol Pot. We have all these monsters. We've got Boko Haram. You know. Caesar. Or not Caesar, but everyone knows what I mean. ISIS. Every bit of violence that is perpetrated daily. This is what makes it so hard to get your head around. Daily, more people's heads get cut off. More kids blow themselves up with dynamite vests in front of a mosque. Well, and that seems like the last word. Because in my experience, we human beings do a lousy job, a rotten job of trying to rectify whatever it is we see as injustices. If you don't believe me, visit Exeter Road, which I know very well. Built for 150 convicts, now stuffed with 400 people. What kind of environment is that for a human being? You know? And that's London, Ontario, folks. That's not some gulag in Siberia or North Korea or wherever else. You know, that's us. That's here. And to find that seemingly inevitable pattern of injustice will ultimately be broken. That's what the resurrection means. That's what it's all about. And that's why I cannot just stand and say, oh, I'm so glad that happened for Jesus out there. Meanwhile, I can go toddle along and behave as I always have. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. To believe in the resurrection is to commit oneself to an absolute reformation of one's life. Full stop.